And welcome to the 12th episode of Season 7 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I am Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Now, this is our third episode about alternative laundries, isn't it, Graham? The cultured one.
Yes, Ray. It's time for a bit of art.
Art and auctions, famous painters, what's not to enjoy there?
Well, exactly, and thanks to our wonderful researchers here at the Dark Money Files, we've discovered a comprehensive report from the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations over in the US all about the use of art in money laundering and sanctions evasions.
The Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. Now, aren't those the people who produced the report that led to HSBC getting a large fine, a deferred prosecution agreement and a five-year monitorship?
They are indeed.
So, not to be taken lightly then.
Definitely not, Ray. They have done some extraordinary and incredibly detailed work in the past and continue to do so. They take time, they perform detailed research and they can call witnesses from all over the world, as we're about to see.
And over the years, they've done reports on private banking and money laundering, correspondent banking and money laundering, offshore tax havens, foreign corruption and money laundering, and that HSBC one, which was actually titled US Vulnerabilities to Money Laundering, Drug and Terrorism Financing.
Yep, and a whole lot more, but which are not particularly relevant to us.
Indeed. What is relevant, though, is the information in this latest report, and it really is worth diving into in some detail.
Not least because it takes us on a journey both unexpected and incredibly relevant to other recent work we've been doing.
Well, I, for one, can't wait. Shall we start with a brief summary of the case study used by the PSI for this report?
Away you go, Ray.
Okay. The case study decided to focus on Russian oligarchs to see if they were able to use art and auctions as a way of avoiding or breaching OFAC sanctions. It specifically focused on two brothers, Arkady and Boris Rotenberg, primarily because they're long-term friends and confidants of President Putin. Their companies have received a large number of multi-billion dollar contracts, and of course they've been sanctioned by the US and others.
And any followers of the events in Russia over the last few years will be well aware of the Rotenbergs and the role their companies have played in, for example, building the infrastructure for the Sochi Olympics, building the bridge from Russia to the disputed Crimean Peninsula, and in the current Nord Stream 2 project.
Although we should point out that there's no dispute in Ukraine around who rightfully has jurisdiction in Crimea, the dispute is largely a Russian one.
Well, that's fair comment, Ray. The report goes on to say that they were particularly interested in how the brothers, and many others, appeared to be relatively unaffected by the impact of sanctions and wanted to understand better why that might be.
Yes, and at that point, there's a paragraph in the report that's worth quoting in full. Here we go. The subcommittee's investigation uncovered a complex set of facts involving shell companies with hidden owners, intermediaries who mask purchasers and sellers, and lax money laundering safeguards in the US art industry.
Yeah, which just about sums up about 90% of our entire podcast output since we launched in January 2019. Mm-hmm. Although at this point, little did we know just how much this report was going to overlap with some of those previous episodes.
Well, quite. The committee goes on to make the point that the art industry, in the US specifically, is largely unregulated, whilst at the same time, the industry itself has been enjoying an unprecedented boom.
Yes, it explains that according to a very recent report by UBS, the Swiss bank, worldwide sales hit $64.1 billion in 2019, of which around 44% was US-based trade, much of which was done by the four main players, which are Sotheby's, Christie's, Bonhams and Phillips. Oddly, all of which started here in the UK, but which are now either headquarters or have a major presence in the US.
And the potential returns are much higher than the equivalent stock market rates, although clearly there's a significant element of risk.
But be that as it may, the report also makes clear that secrecy is pervasive in the art market in a way, frankly, that's inconceivable in regulated financial services. At the time of the report, auction houses had voluntary AML policies in place, but they have to be placed against a background of much of their sales being done through agents or intermediaries who simply will not divulge the name of their underlying clients, partly for fear of the auction house going direct and cutting the agent out of the deal.
But, unavoidably, secrecy, anonymity, high-value goods and a lack of regulation, taken in the round, are a perfect storm for money launderers.
Yes.
The report also goes on to make clear how difficult it is to trace the ownership of works of art when they're owned by shell companies based in secrecy locations, a difficulty highlighted by the publishing of the Panama Papers by the ICIJ, which for the first time shone a light where there had previously been darkness.
Yes, and they highlight one email chain which listed Boris Rotenberg as the UBO of a company called Highland Ventures and Arkady's son Igor Rotenberg as the UBO of another company called Highland Business.
And we should say very clearly at this point that we're going to report the facts given in the report alongside others gleaned from Companies House without comment or judgment.
Definitely. It is for others to make of this what they will. We will, as you say, Ray, simply relate the facts as given. On the whole, though, I think that will be enough.
Well, let's carry on then, Graham. At this point, the report specifically mentions a chap called Mark Omelnitsky, a London-based incorporation agent who has a firm called Marcom Management Limited, and who's been a director or PSC of a bunch of other companies, most of which are now dissolved, some quite recently.
But not all, intriguingly. Anyway, the committee clearly had access to a very large number of banking records because they go on to itemise some eye-watering sums of money moving through these company accounts, most of which related to the purchase of works of art.
Many of which, we ought to point out, were stored at a huge freeport in Geneva, which is reputed to hold artworks valued at more than $100 billion.
Freeports are amazing places, aren't they, Ray? Sort of hinterland where no one appears to have jurisdiction, anonymity is easy, and goods can change hands without anyone knowing or tax being paid or the need to actually move them from the warehouse in which they're being stored.
And they're an absolute magnet for time reversal, as anyone who's watched Tenet will know. And possibly regret having spent the time watching Tenet. But that's all a story for another day, Graham. And at this point, the report goes into a great deal of detail about the background to the sanctions, the history of the Rotenbergs and their relationship with both Mark Omelnitsky and another actor in this story, a chap called Gregory Baltzer.
Yeah, Mr. Baltzer also has UK companies which are worth a look. Now, the report states that Mr. Baltzer had a Belize-registered company, can you believe it, called Steemort Limited, along with a UK LLP called Baltzer LLP. Now, we should say at this point that Baltzer, the LLP, had a Z in it, whereas Mr. Baltzer's name has an S in it. Baltzer LLP, though, had two previous names. It was originally registered as Prudential Trading LLP and then changed its name to Steemort LLP before finally becoming Baltzer LLP.
Now, that similarity is presumably not a coincidence, Graham.
Well, I wouldn't think so, Ray. The NLP had a bunch of previous officers, including Marcom Corporate Limited and others, many of which were in Cyprus, the British Virgin Islands or the Marshall Islands.
Well, fancy that.
And it's even more intriguing as the report states that Mr. Bautzer was not the owner of the Belizean Steamort Company.
Even though he had a UK LLP that used to be called Steamort.
Apparently, Mr. Bautzer told Christie's that Steamort Limited was actually owned by somebody called Louisa Brown.
And who's she?
Nobody knows, Ray. Nobody knows.
I wonder if Louisa knows she owns this company.
Well, do you know, I fancy not, but that is just conjecture.
What we do know is that Mr. Omelnitsky served as AML officer to Bolzer's auction club and agency.
Yes, and another close associate of Mr. Omelnitsky, a lady called Anna Wilkes, now appears in the report because she was the signatory on a deal to buy Magritte's painting La Poitrine as a director for Highland Ventures.
That's one of the Rotenberg's companies, isn't it?
Allegedly, yes. Uh-huh. The report paints a picture of a group of individuals acting together to provide both legal entities and other services to facilitate art purchases on behalf of the Rotenbergs. At this point, some other UK companies make an appearance. One is called Advantage Alliance. One is called Aester Limited, A-E-S-T-E-R. And the third is Sinara Company, LP.
Can I make an observation at this point, Graham?
Oh, Ray, please do.
It's just that there are more companies with names that could mean anything or nothing.
Yeah, seen those before, haven't we?
Yeah.
But what they do have, Ray, is some very interesting registered addresses.
Okay.
Let's start with Advantage Alliance Limited, which is actually now called Marcom Intermediary Services Limited.
So, not much doubt about the Omelnitsky connection.
No, but then Mr. Omelnitsky has twice been a director of the company anyway, so I think we can take that as read.
And what's their registered address?
Ray, it's the courthouse, the old police station in Ashby de la Zouche.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm really not. Mind you, it was a much travelled company beforehand, having changed its registered address 11 times in its 16-year history.
And how's it doing now?
It's in voluntary liquidation.
Ah, and just before the PSI report was published, I guess that's not unrelated.
No, I don't think so. So let's move on to Aester Limited. That is registered to John Prince's Street.
Not number 13, Graham, surely?
Well, what makes you ask, Ray?
Well, number 13 featured strongly in our recent live event on the Beirut blast. It was home to the company records of four UK companies that appear to be related in some way to each other, one of which, called Savaro, actually owned the ammonium nitrate that blew up with such devastating effect.
And it is indeed registered to number 13, although we should add there are a lot of companies registered to that address.
Well, that's true. And who are the officers of this company?
They are ATM Secretaries Limited of Belize and El Marie Ibanez, a South African. She provides a contact address in Great Russell Street.
Not number 10.
Oh, yes.
Graham, that was the address that Savaro moved to not long after it was registered.
I know, Ray. Mind you, that's not the only address that Ms. Ibanez has provided to Company's House.
So this isn't her only directorship, then?
No, no. She has clocked up 101 of them, including one registering her address as 175 Darks Lane in Potter's Bar.
Home to a large number of Ali Moulay companies.
Yep, and of course John Prince's Street, but also 101 Rose Lane up in Scotland, home to a huge bunch of those pesky Scottish Limited partnerships.
And the PSC of this company?
That would be Oleksandr Baksaliar of Ukraine.
And he is?
I have absolutely no idea, Ray.
Another Louisa, perhaps. Let's go back to ATM Secretaries Limited. You say they're a Belize company.
Yes.
But am I not right in saying there is an identically named company in the UK?
There is.
Could they by any chance be related?
Well, the UK ATM Secretaries Limited is currently registered to 13 John Prince's Street, Ray.
Imagine that. links to Savaro and the other Beirut companies yet again.
Yes, and it was originally registered, ATM Secretaries Limited, on the 11th of July 2006.
Which is around the same time as Savaro, isn't it, Graham?
Well remembered, Ray. It was precisely 1 month and 2 days later.
Now, Savaro was originally registered at 14 Tottenham Court Road. Where was ATM Secretaries originally registered, out of interest?
14 Tottenham Court Road.
Interesting. Now, on the 1st of July 2008, Savaro moved to 10 Great Russell Street. What about ATM?
They moved there the day before.
Okay, you're kidding me now, right?
No. They genuinely moved their registered address to 10 Great Russell Street on the 30th of June 2008.
And then Savaro moved the inspection location for their corporate filings to 13 John Prince's Street on the 29th of June 2011.
And you'll be delighted to hear that ATM didn't move to John Prince's Street until September 2012.
I'm not sure delighted's the right word, Graham. But before we move on, Savaro Limited was incorporated on the 9th of June 2006 and registered to 14 Tottenham Court Road before moving to 10 Great Russell Street whilst locating its corporate filings at 13 John Prince's Street.
Whereas ATM Secretaries was incorporated on the 11th of July 2006 and registered to 14 Tottenham Court Road before moving to 10 Great Russell Street and then on to 13 John Prince's Street.
Coincidence?
Shall we leave that to our listeners to decide?
While we're on the subject of ATM Secretaries, I've just had a look at their directors.
And?
They have had a couple of South Africans who we've come across before.
The ones who both live in that small suburb of Hartbeespoort, along with at least another 29 people who've been directors of companies which have fallen within our purview. Yes.
And a chap from Newcastle.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, Ray.
No, except this Newcastle is the Newcastle on the island of Nevis.
Ah.
And then there's a British chap who lives in Cyprus and has had nearly 1,000 appointments as a director across the globe.
Ah, him, yes.
And then there's a chap who was named in the reporting on the FinCEN files by the BBC in an article entitled "One of the World's Dodgiest Addresses is in Leafy Hertfordshire."
Oh, you live in Hertfordshire, don't you, Ray?
Yeah, they're not talking about me, though, Graham. Oh. they're talking about 175 Darks Lane. And according to that report, the person who now uses that address is a chap named Alexei Strukov, one of the former directors of ATM.
You said former, Ray. So does that mean the company has now dissolved?
No, not at all, Graham. It's still going strong.
Really?
Well, I say going strong, ignoring the fact that it's only ever filed dormant accounts.
Of course it has. Where have we heard that before, Ray?
Well, Savaro, for one, despite having spent millions of dollars, ostensibly, on some ammonium nitrate.
Of course. And the fact that it's still active means it must have active company offices.
Yes, one of our ladies from Hartbeespoort and a Lithuanian gentleman.
Right.
But we should make the point, Graham, that this ATM Secretaries may be nothing to do with the ATM Secretaries of Belize, which was named in the PSI report.
Well, true, Ray, but there is one more interesting piece of information worth discussing.
Which is?
Well, ATM Secretaries Limited of the UK, in their last shareholder disclosure before the advent of the person with significant control regime, declared ATM Secretaries Limited as its sole shareholder.
Limited as in the abbreviation, as opposed to limited, the complete word.
Yes.
And how many companies of that exact name incorporating that abbreviation are there in the world, Graham?
There is one, Ray.
Is it in Belize?
Yes.
Thought it might be. It's time for a recap. The US Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations published a report about alleged sanctions breaches by Arkady and Boris Rotenberg. The report names both Mark Omelnitsky and Gregory Baltzer as enablers of these sanctions breaches, and they're both associated with a number of UK legal entities.
And those UK legal entities appear to be linked to others which share extraordinary commonalities with yet further entities which have been associated with other sanctioned individuals, and the shell company which owned the ammonium nitrate which blew up in Beirut last year.
And we need to make the point that none of this was on our radar when we started writing this episode.
Absolutely not, and it still sounds faintly ludicrous.
But look, Graham, this episode was supposed to be about the art market, auctions and sanctions evasion. We really should include a bit more on that.
Well, we should, and helpfully, the PSI report has quite significant detail on that subject as well, Ray, so shall we take a look?
I think we should.
Right, so the report identifies what it refers to as pre-sanctioned and post-sanctioned purchases. Most, if not all, of the pre-sanctioned purchases, and that means pre-sanctioned of the Rotenbergs, are via Steemort and Highland Business, the offshore companies.
But that seemed to change after the sanctions were imposed, didn't it?
Yes, the Rotenbergs were sanctioned by OFAC on March the 20th, 2014. On May the 8th, 2014, Sotheby's held a sale in New York, during which Mr. Baltzer purchased a number of works for a total of $6,753,000 through Baltzer LLP. The money was sent to Baltzer's account by Steemort Limited.
Which, coincidentally, is what Baltzer LLP was called prior to changing its name in July 2013 via a filing at Companies House. Signed not by Mr. Baltzer, but by Mark Omelnitsky.
Do we know where Steemort Limited, the Belizean company, held their banking arrangements, Ray?
Yes, Graham. It was with the Tallinn Business Bank.
As in Tallinn, Estonia?
That's the place.
Good grief.
And then there was the purchase of Magritte's La Poitrine for $7.5 million in June 2014 by Advantage Alliance Limited. There's a great quote by the private dealer who was asked about the involvement of Highland Ventures and Advantage Alliance in the deal, to which she replied that she never questioned the involvement of either in the transaction, nor would it occur to her to do so.
And that's not a criticism of her, more of a general comment on the difference between the art market and banking. There are some other details of the sale which also differ remarkably from our world of transactional banking as well, aren't there?
Like the purchase agreement listed Highland Ventures Group Limited as the buyer, while the private dealer was listed as the agent for the undisclosed owner.
Yes, and quotes, the private dealer wired Art Advisor One's mother $400,000 for, quotes, fixed agreed introduction commissions fees on the purchase of the painting by the client.
Try getting that past a bank's compliance department.
Well, I'd rather not. And then there's the purchase of a painting in Switzerland for $1,750,000, which was originally invoiced to Igor Rotenberg, as he was the person who bought it, but which was subsequently requested to be changed to Baltzer LLP, with the funds wired ultimately from Baltzer's account with Barclays to the gallery account at Citibank.
And we should also make clear at this point that following a detailed investigation by Barclays, they ultimately exited all of the business which they'd held with Baltzer and Omelnitsky, which were numerous.
Indeed. Sadly, not before millions of dollars had flowed through them.
Yeah. The report notes that when the Advantage Alliance account was opened at Barclays, the expected annual turnover on the account was forecast to be around $3 million. However, between March 2012 and May 2016, a total of nearly $61 million, $60,972,491.89, went through the account in the form of 129 wire transfers.
Which works out rather closer to $15 million a year, quite a bit more than expected.
And I wonder what the periodic reviews look like.
We'll probably never know.
And Graham, I see another delicious quote in the report, which if it was made by, say, a relationship manager in a bank, would potentially result in a sackable offence.
Would you like to read it out for the benefit of our listeners, Ray?
I would. It's quite lengthy and it relates to the purchase of two photographs by Bulzer LLP. Here we go. On November the 21st, 2014, Highland Ventures wired $743,185 from its Gazprom bank account in Moscow to Stemort's Tallinn business bank account. The same day, Highland Ventures also wired $337,285 from its Moscow-based Gazprom account to Stemort's Tallinn Business Bank account. The amounts together totaled $1,080,470. However, instead of Stemort forwarding the payment to Bulzer LLP, Stemort paid Phillips directly. An employee of Mr. Bulzer emailed Phillips that Mr. Bulzer's client wired the money for the paintings to the wrong account. Mr. Bulzer's employee asked Phillips to re-invoice to a third party, Stemort.
Oh, expensive photographs, mind you. Mm. And somewhat surprisingly, Phillips allowed this to happen as long as Stemort opened an account directly with them.
Yes, and when asked, the Phillips Bulzer account representative said she did not know for whom Mr. Bulzer purchased these photographs or the owners of Stemort.
Oh. And so it goes on for many more pages, but I fancy, Ray, there is little more to say that hasn't already been said.
No, and I feel this is the moment to draw this episode to a conclusion, Graham.
And what an episode it's been, Ray.
Yeah, we'd nearly finished writing this when we decided to interleave this series on alternative laundries with our episode on the FCA's letter, so it's been a bit of a wait to record this one.
Worth waiting for, though.
Hmm, so where do we go next, Graham?
Well, Ray, I thought we might draw this series of alternative laundries to a conclusion by doing an episode on informal value transfer systems. We've alluded to them in the past, but we've never really covered them properly.
I'm looking forward to it.